This is Open to Hope Radio, featuring Dr. Gloria Horsley and her daughter, Dr. Heidi Horsley, coming to you on behalf of the Open to Hope Foundation, dedicated to those who are looking for hope after loss. Now, here's Dr. Gloria.
Welcome to the Open to Hope Show. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. Well, Heidi, tomorrow's the beginning of the Compassionate Friends Conference in Minneapolis, Minnesota, right?
Yes, it is. The conference runs from July 15th to the 17th. You can, if you're not registered, you can just show up and register at the door. And we hope to see you there because we will be presenting. My mom and I will be presenting several workshops. And our guests will also be presenting.
Yeah. That's really going to be great. And then make sure that you, for you people who are in Virginia or want to go to Arlington, we're going to be at the Brief Parents USA conference doing a keynote, right, Hyde?
Yep, a keynote at Brief Parents USA, July 29th to the 31st, and it's in Reston, Virginia, which apparently is right outside D.C.
Yep, and we'll be there to sign copies of our new book, put out by the Open to Hope Foundation. We have over 100 people that have written for the Open to Hope site, and they've got wonderful articles in the book, a lot on grief, loss, hope, and healing. Well, Heidi, why don't you introduce our guest today? Because as we said, she's also going to be at the conference and is a good friend of ours, right?
Yes, I'm excited to have Ann on. Our guest is Ann Hood. She's a friend of ours. And Ann and I have a lot in common because we both have adopted daughters from China, and we actually didn't know that until recently. Ann had a five-year-old daughter named Grace that died in 2002 of a rare form of strep. She's written numerous books. She's a professional writer. She's the real deal in the writing community. And she's written in really great books, a lot of them. But the two that we're going to talk about is The Knitting Circle and The Red Thread. And welcome to the show, Ann. We're excited to have you here.
Hi. Nice to talk to you both again.
Great to have you on. Well, you are an example of, I think, about writing about your personal experience, which is, you know, kind of an amazing thing. The Knitting Circle is such a great book, and we'll have you talk about that and how you came to write it, and also comfort. We didn't even mention that, how you do write about your personal experience, but sometimes in novels and sometimes not in novels, right?
Yes, that's right. Yep, I do both.
Well, tell us a little bit.
Well, you know,
bit,
it's interesting because in the weeks and months after Grace died, and this was back in 2002, the two things that I had always kind of relied on to get me through everything, including some pretty devastating losses. My only sibling, my brother, died in 1982. My dad died relatively young in 1997. And always I could turn to books, either reading them or writing them. You know, words have always been sort of my place of comfort. But right after Grace died, I couldn't read and I couldn't write. It was like that part of my brain just shut down. And when I slowly began to write again, the last thing I wanted to delve into was losing Grace.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to sit in my little office, you know, hour after hour, as I do usually, and relive this enormous, terrible loss. But I could do it fictionally, because fiction kind of puts up a scrim between the writer and the events and allows you to make things work out differently, to explore areas that if you're too close to them, you're unable to explore through nonfiction. And so the first thing that I wrote was The Knitting Circle, and I knew that it would be about a woman who lost a young daughter, but I knew that I would give her things that I did not have available to me when Grace died. I gave her a magical knitting circle,
mm-hmm,
where she could go and people could, one by one and as a group, help her, you know, through her grief.
Yeah, it's a wonderful book. Was that your first book?
No, actually, you know, it's interesting. So many people think of it because it's like I've had this big gap in my career. My first book came out in 1987. When I was about 10 years old. No. It came out in 1987. And it's called Somewhere Off the Coast of Maine. And it was an international bestseller. You know, for a first novel, it was like a dream experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been working as a flight attendant for about 8 years when that book came out. And I moved kind of seamlessly from flight attendant career to writing career, and started writing for newspapers and magazines.
Oh, my favorite
and
thing,
wrote,
yeah.
Six more novels and memoir before The Knitting Circle came out.
My goodness. My first experience with you was The New York Times when you wrote about your politics with your husband.
Yeah, one of his favorites.
That was a great op-ed piece. That was a lot
of
fun.
I've had several articles in The New York Times. They're actually wonderful, and right now I'm doing a four-part series.
Oh, wow.
For them. It's been running, the first one was in July, and then there was one in October, and one just ran a couple weeks ago, and unfortunately the final one looms, you know, probably in spring. It's called Home Economics, and I write about the economy in my neighborhood through a novelist's point of view.
Oh, how great. Oh, I'll have to make sure I get that.
I got a lot of teasing from my family, like, what, you're going to make, like, pie charts and things? Like, no. It's the economy, but more through personal stories, you know?
Right. Well, what I want to get into today with you two, both you and Heidi, is adoption after loss, because I know you lost Grace, but Heidi's had, you know, several miscarriages, right, Heidi, before you adopted. So you both had loss. So talk a little bit about decision to adopt after a loss, because I know there are people out there who have had a loss and they're thinking, might want to adopt. What about that? And I'm also thinking another thing that's going to come up for me is, what if you want to and your husband doesn't want to, or what if your partner wants to and you don't want to, or, you know, how does that all work out? When's too soon? I mean, there just got to be a zillion questions about this.
All good questions, and I think we could probably talk about those for hours, couldn't we, Heidi?
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, when we decided to do it, it was very interesting because we came to the decision independently at the same time. So the night I went to speak to Lorne, my husband, about it, he was going to talk to me about it. It's just the oddest
thing. That's amazing.
Yeah. And you know, I have so many wonderful friends and family members. I mean, I have an amazing community of support that continues to support me with the loss of Grace. You know, they haven't said, well, it's 8 years. Come on. You know, they continue to remember her birthday and to remember her and remember us. And they're wonderful. But within that community, there were a few who said, you're doing the wrong thing about adoption. Well-meaning, not at all, you know, coming from a place of love, wanting to take care of us. They were worried that, and I think this is the concern after loss that people have, either about themselves or about people they love. They were worried we were trying to just plug in a new Grace, get a baby, and force her to be Grace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what was abundantly clear to me when we lost Grace was I could plug in a million babies. There would never be a replacement Grace. Mm-hmm. She was unique, as all of our children are. But I knew that she was irreplaceable. That is part of the grieving I was doing. I couldn't replace her.
Mm-hmm.
But our family had so much love that I knew it would be healing to be able to give that love.
And did you want to give Sam another sibling?
Absolutely. And honestly, I've told the story so many times because it is such like a crystal clear moment. It wasn't like this thing I'm about to tell you happened and I was like, have to adopt a baby. No, it was what I realized. He needs a sibling. He has his loss. It's so huge. I was driving and it was, you know, it might have been almost a year after Grace had died. And Sam was 9 and he was a kid who loved Transformers. He was always like manipulating them. They moved from like robot to monster or truck or something. And I looked in the rearview mirror, and he was sitting, and he had his Optimus Prime on his lap, just this hunk of plastic, and he wasn't even touching it, and he was looking out the window. And I thought, he needs a sibling. Mm-hmm. He needs that feeling again. He shouldn't be the little boy alone in the back seat.
That was definitely one of the driving forces for me, is watching Alexander getting old, always being... He was always alone. I mean, he never had a sibling, and me trying to get pregnant and having years of miscarriages and infertility and looking at him, you know, alone oftentimes and going, you know what, I loved having a sibling. I loved having siblings, and I want him to have that experience, and I want to have that for him in my life, you know. I want him to have that experience.
Yes. It's a gift. I think siblings are gifts. you know, and I wanted him to have that again.
Well, Grace and Sam, I've got to tell you, Anne, one of the things that has always struck me and that I always think of when I think of you is how close Grace and Sam were, that they slept together. I mean, they were really, really close.
They were inseparable. They slept together every night, never in either of their beds. They had a very large, imaginative play life, and they would, you know, erect tents and be, you know, cowboys, and they would sleep on the floor and pretend they were like pioneer children, and, you know, they had their own world, and it broke my heart that Sam was left, you know, back in our world, you know, wholly back in our world without anyone to share his pretty amazing imagination. We have so many pictures of them sleeping together, holding hands.
And what a wonderful, I was going to ask you, how do you keep Grace's memory alive for Sam and in the family? And also for Annabelle, right? Her sister.
Well, you know, and I think that's a big challenge. And I know through Compassionate Friends, I've heard so many stories of people, the things that they do. And you know, it's really quite wonderful, but it's so frustrating because you want to strike that balance of what's healthy and keeping, you know, your child that you've lost still part of your family in some way, but in a way that's healthy and meaningful. And Grace, I always say her footprints are all over the house. you know, and that in some ways it's literal, because one of the things that we kept were her favorite pairs of shoes, because she was like Imelda Marcos. She loved shoes. And we kept the ones that were the most Grace-like. And we have them at the top. We have two staircases in our house, which sounds quite grand, but trust me, it isn't. And we kept them at the top of the back stairs. We have three pairs of her most Grace-like shoes.
Okay, and so I love Annabelle play with these?
No, you know, I don't want to say that they're untouchable, because they have, you know, we dust them and they're there, and they're part of, they're almost like, you know, sculpture. They're there almost like sculpture, and certainly Annabelle can touch them or whatever, but she did ask me once if when she outgrew her pair of sparkly shoes, could she wear Grace's? And it was one of those moments where I like froze. And then I said, no, you know, we're keeping those to remember Grace, and you get your own shoes. You're you. Mm-hmm. You know, you get your own shoes. But we have pictures of Grace and her artwork. She was, you know, only five and a half, but she was a talented little artist for a five-year-old. You know, I don't want to mislead you there. But we had framed, you know, some of her stuff because it was pretty good. So we have that. We have pictures of her. We have her glasses on one of our mantles. We talk about her. You know, our photo albums are filled with Grace. So Annabelle knows what Grace was like. You know, she knows a little bit about her. For Sam, I do fear that she's fading. He's almost 18. And I think more than letting Annabelle know who Grace was, that's the easy part. It's making sure Sam remembers her.
Well, sometimes it takes a while, because Heidi's younger sister has just come to terms with it in the past, few years. And it's been 26 years. So, you know.
I think as a teen, she kind of put a lot of stuff on hold, because, you know, you're trying to be normal and be a regular teen and not have anything that separates you. And she just kept it on hold for years until she was out of that part of her life.
And now she's very involved with us, you know, in the foundation and everything. Well, I wanted to move on to another topic quickly, because in the red thread, first of all, I want you to tell people why you call it the red thread, because I love that. And also, I just want to touch on, you talk about it in the book. You have the woman who gives up her baby. And talk a little bit about, and you and Heidi can chime in, about these wonderful mothers that are giving their babies up for adoption.
Who we thank every day, don't we, Heidi?
Absolutely.
We thank those mothers, the red thread is an amazing concept. And, you know, it's interesting. It is a Chinese concept, but other cultures have similar ones. Some cultures have a silver thread, which I thought was interesting, but it means the same thing, which is that all of the people in our lives from the past and in the future are connected to us by an invisible red thread, and that no matter how tangled or frayed that thread becomes, they're still on the other end of it. And I think there's so many wonderful aspects to that, but if you've lost someone, I love the idea that they're still out there, you know, and they're not, they're still connected. And the fact that people we don't even know yet, and then I think in our case, these amazing daughters that we have, before we met them, they were still connected to us. You know, I love the idea of it. And since we both adopted from China, you know, Heidi, you know too that because of the one child policy there, women every day are forced to abandon their baby girls, often when they're just a few days old.
And it's my understanding that they have to go to another village or hide their pregnancy, because if they have a girl and they want the girl to go out for adoption and they know they can't keep her, people can't, the government wants them to keep their girls.
Yeah, so they go very far away. I mean, I've heard of incredible stories of them walking quite far, you know, knowing that the due date's coming, and just to have the baby elsewhere so they can leave the baby in.
If it's a girl, yeah. Right.
Yeah, if it's a girl. And I think that I wanted to, they don't have a voice, really, those women, because it's illegal to keep your daughter, sometimes your second daughter, and it's illegal to abandon them. And so the women are kind of trapped, and they don't talk about it freely because of the legal issues. And so I did as much research as I could, which is limited because they can't talk about it. But I wanted to give them a voice. So when I decided to write a book in which American couples create families after all kinds of loss, and from all kinds of places, I wanted to make sure to represent the mothers who are making those families happy.
Mm-hmm. I was so glad you did that, because I always think that these babies must have amazing mothers.
Yes.
And it was heartbreaking. You really tugged at the heartstrings, because I really got into what it must be like for these moms to have to put their babies, you know, take their babies and put them in places they'll be found and not raise them. And how heartbreaking that is for these women who have no other choice, oftentimes.
I know. It is so sad. There's one book, which I'm sure you've read, Heidi, called Wanting a Daughter, Needing a Son. Mm-hmm. And the writer, whose name I can't remember, I wish I could, sitting here right now, but she wanted to interview women who had given up their babies for adoption in China, and it took her something like 10 years to find enough women to talk about it, to make her study, like an anthropological study, valid. And finally she's able to talk to these women, and she said not one of them could finish the interview without crying from grief over having to give up her child.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think that's one of my biggest wishes in life, is that I wish that Samantha's biological mother would somehow know that we are loving her as our own daughter, which she is, and that she's being taken care of and loved. You know, I kind of want to put it out there in the universe, and yet I know that I don't know how to contact her because I have no information, as none of us do.
Yeah. So. You know, we went to China just a year ago, this time last year, and we went back to Hunan, and so Annabelle could see her orphanage because we heard it was being torn down.
How old is Annabelle right now?
She's almost seven.
Okay.
Yeah, she's almost seven. And we told the orphanage director, please, here's our information. If her mother ever came looking for her, we would want her to know she's okay. We would want her to contact us. And the orphanage director looked at us and she said, she's not going to do that.
Mm-hmm,
we don't, you know, they think it's kind of funny there that adopted families kind of reconnect here. You know, an adopted child might seek the mother because they really see it as a choice for life.
Mm, right.
And Annabelle and Sam, I'm so curious to know about their relationship, their sibling relationship, because Grace and Sam were so connected at the hip. I know it's different because it's a different sibling, but how is their relationship?
They have an incredible relationship. Very different, of course, you know, 10 years age difference, you know, Sam and Grace are only a couple years, almost 3 years apart, but he is the big brother of every little girl's dreams, you know, and she adores him, and he's a senior in high school, so we've been, you know, doing the college tours and stuff, and we don't usually take Annabelle with us because it's kind of boring for her, but we did take her when we went up to look at Ithaca College, which was about 6 hours from us. And we got in the car, and Sam said, "Oh, I really like it." And Annabelle burst into tears and said, "Why can't you just go to Brown? It's only two blocks from our house. You can't leave me." Sobbing. And
he's touching.
They're adorable. And he is 6'5", and she's like 3 foot nothing. She's the tiniest little thing. And we can't take a picture of them unless he's holding her, because they don't both fit in the frame.
Oh, my gosh, that is so adorable.
Oh, well, so Anne, I love your book, and if people want to hear more about this in fiction but based in reality, they should get your book, The Red Thread, and, of course, read The Knitting Circle and Comfort and, you know, all the great things that you do, and I'm going to be looking for you in The New York Times, and I'm going to also be looking forward to seeing you at The Compassionate Friends. Now, do you have any information, contact information, you want people to know, or should we just go to Amazon?
No, you know, actually, I have a website, which is www.annhood.us.
All right.
And it usually has any events I'm doing. You know, I write a blog every week. Any information about books is on there and a place to contact me.
All right. Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, and we're going to look forward to seeing you at the Compassionate Friends.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you guys. Thanks so much.
Can't wait to
thank
see you tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. See you tomorrow.
Well, Heidi, Anne is so great, isn't she? It's such a delight to talk to her.
I absolutely love her. And like I said, we have so many things in common. And I just want to say to our audience, children come to us in many ways. And adopting a child is not a replacement for anything. But for those people out there that are like, you know what, I really, really, really want another child, there are many, many ways to bring children into your life, and adoption is one of them. And when I held Samantha and had waited years and years for another child, I looked at her and said, you know what, this is the daughter I was always meant to have. So just to put it out there for people.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I love, yes, Anne's book is fabulous, and she's a great person.
Well, you've been listening to the Open to Hope show, and we hope you'll visit us on Facebook and on our website, and you can, there's a section there where you can tell us your story, and we're always interested to hear your story. Stay tuned again next week.
You've been listening to Open to Hope Radio, hosted by Drs. Gloria and Heidi Horsley. Like today's edition, all of our past programs are available on demand at opentohope.com. Along with helpful articles, videos, resources, and links to help get you through the toughest time of your life. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter and sign up for our monthly newsletter. Again, that's opentohope.com. Check it out today. Then be sure to stop by next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time when we'll be posting another edition of Open to Hope Radio. Remember, others have been where you are. They made it through, and you can too, as long as you're open to hope.